Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Paula Poundstone is familiar to most public radio listeners as a regular on NPR's weekly news quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She was recently inducted into the Comedy Hall of Fame, the latest in a string of awards and honors that include many firsts, as in first woman to perform at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and more. She's scheduled to appear at the Capitol Theater on Friday, and she joins us today for a preview. Welcome to the show, Paula.
Hey, thanks so much.
You know, most of our listeners are familiar with your work on NPR's weekly news quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. How do you prepare for that show? Are you a current events buff?
No. No, I don't see how anyone can be permanently. Because every week there's more. That's the problem. It's one thing if you're a history buff, but you know, this current events thing, it's like the little ball that eats things in Pac-Man. I buy a stack of newspapers during the week. I listen to public radio anyways. Mm-hmm. But I try to, you know, kick up my listening that particular week. But I buy a stack of newspapers and I try to cram, usually on the airplane on the day of the show.
And is there a particular topic in current events that appeals to that you find your repartee comes more naturally, like politics or goofy things?
No. I wish I could say that there was. It's funny how many people think that I'm. First of all, I always like to dispel this. I always like to clear up any confusion by telling people, yes, I am trying to win. All people also have the nerve to believe that I wasn't even trying to win. No, I'm trying very hard to win. I do feel that the others cheat. I feel that they are simply born into the world knowing more about current events than I, and this makes for not a you know, level playing field.
When you're traveling from city to city, you know, doing your comedy stand up. Does your routine vary much from, I guess, maybe from state to state or city to city?
It does. It does. Because probably it depends on the night, of course, but maybe a third of each show is, I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? I talk to the audience, and little biographies emerge, and I kind of weave those together throughout the night and use those as sort of a jumping-off place for what to say about myself and my own reflections, and it keeps every show obviously pretty unique to the last.
That's what you're really well known for, is ad-libbing or extemporaneous.
It's the fun part. I mean, I have an act, and I think my jokes are actually pretty good, but it is the fun part for me. I love talking to the crowd. Even when I'm in a really terrible mood and I, you know, I go on and begin a show, there's a magic to talking to a group of people who've come out to laugh for the night.
My guest is comedian Paula Poundstone. She's going to be at the Capitol Theater on Friday. If you have a question or comment for Paula, we can try to squeeze them in. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. When you were in Texas recently, you chatted about the governor there. You had some fun. I think that was in February. You were wondering about the governor, Rick Perry, and I was wondering if you have any choice observations about Ohio's new governor.
I'm not familiar with Ohio's new governor. You know, on the weekend when I was in Texas, it happened to have been the weekend of the governor's conference in D.C., and I was stuck in a hotel room and had C-SPAN on because I like to torment myself when I can. And I was watching. They had all these meetings, all these little breakout meetings with different governors, and there that I had never seen nor thought about the Texas governor before that, but he was just the silliest guy, and I couldn't help asking the Texans how exactly they select their governor, because clearly it's not through the election process. I don't know if it's one of the things like the PTA where, you know, somebody gets up and uses the bathroom, and then when they come back, they've been elected president. But it's certainly not through listening to what the guy had to say and then making a reasonable choice to select him, because he was nutty as a fruitcake.
Well, you compared him to Ann Richards. former governor of Texas.
Because there's no comparison. I must have been high that day.
Yeah, it was in that sense that there was no comparison.
Rational and reasonable and funny. And this guy was just, he should be selling you shoes or a car, but surely not being the governor.
You made some comments about former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger on a recent show.
I can't even remember anymore, but I will say California really fell on its sword for the rest of the country by electing Arnold Schwarzenegger. Because keep in mind that during the period where he was our governor, he was not able to make any more of those movies. So we really sacrificed.
Meaning it did all of us a favor.
Yes, yes. And that's exactly why we did it.
Actually, it was during all, these formative years of my son growing up. And there were no new Arnold Schwarzenegger movies out there. That's a good point. There's a whole generation now.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And a lot of people didn't realize. A lot of people thought we were just stupid or weird. And, why would we do that? But, the thing about Californians, there's a level of generosity there that the rest of the country just can't relate to.
Are you... the 2012 campaign is upon us.
Let me just say, although I am a Democrat and I like, I'm just saying that by way of full disclosure, it has nothing to do with, I'm not one of those people who go around telling everybody they have to think the way that I do. You know what I mean? I don't proselytize from stage. I may say what I think, but I don't insist that anybody who thinks different than me is an idiot or that, whatever. Everyone can just go to the voting booth and express their desires that way, and that's fine with me. But I do feel the need, in light of recent events, to say that Mitt Romney is running for president. I just feel so bad about what happened to him that I think all of us should turn to whoever we're near and say, Mitt Romney is running for president, because clearly his announcement was squelched.
Sarah Palin and her history lesson.
And her family bus, which I think is brilliant. because the kids have room to separate seats in a bus. And, when we vacation, we ride around in a minivan, which is fairly roomy, but not roomy enough. And therefore, a lot of the big battles that we see are actually in our car. So I you got to give the Palins credit for that. Yeah, she said it was a coincidence, with that kind of funny, dibbly, winky cutaway she has of talking. She said it was a coincidence that she showed up 5 miles away from where Mitt Romney announced right at the time that he was announcing.
Which meant that all the national press scuttled off to cover her.
To follow her, which does strike me as a little bit weird. I mean, I don't know why they would do that, given that Mitt Romney was announcing that he was running for president. I mean, of the two things, in fairness to him, what he had to say was more important. Because he's going to run for president. And I think that, just standing by itself, makes it important that you listen to what he has to say, as opposed to hearing about Sarah Palin's vacation anecdotes. And her explanation of Paul Revere, which
is
a little bit dicey, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, they called her on it on Fox, and they said, you got the story wrong. She said, no, I did not. I know my history, and she stands by it.
Yeah. He didn't really have time to shout all that. I think it was just a code. Is he 1 of by 1, 2 of by C, or something like that? He didn't go into a lengthy thing about... Yeah.
No, yeah, it was kind of quick, yeah.
Yeah,
he's flying by.
He just dashed it off, it was like how we yell stuff at each other when we're driving. It's just a quick, one or two words, and then you roll up the window.
Kind of like a Twitter,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not a lengthy thing. I'd hate to see Sarah Palin yell at somebody in traffic, because apparently... She doesn't just make a quick judgment about the incident that occurred in traffic. She goes into a lengthy thing, apparently. She's like my daughter telling a story. My oldest daughter, when you ask her, why didn't you do your homework before? She starts an explanation that goes so far back in time that she just loses you and you give up. You know what I mean? She begins with, the Paleozoic era when she goes to explain why she didn't do her homework. And, she's probably right that it's all linked up. But it's a bit much to live through.
Does she blame it on you ever?
Oh, heavens, yes. Wrong Mom.
Mm-hmm.
In my house, I am a superhero. I called Wrong Mom. You know, they tell me how I do everything wrong, and then they say, will I do this for them?
Good point.
It makes no sense. Yeah, you know, I'm an idiot, and I dress funny, and by the way, will I come pick you up?
You're right. They'll let you. From Terry on Facebook, I love Paula. My favorite bit is about always being on the wrong side of the plane when you fly over something very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. My people on the left, people on the right, when the pilot points stuff out the window, I never am in the correct seat.
It seems like they don't do that much anymore, though.
Well, you know, since 9/11, they're trying to focus. They're just listening for noises. They don't do it as much as they used to. They still occasionally do it. Every now and then you get a really chatty one. I always get those flight attendants who keep thanking me for flying with them. And I can't help thinking, you know, I fly on all the airlines. I don't fly exclusively on any one airline. I choose a flight because they were going about where I had to go about the time I had to get there. You know, for about the price I could afford.
Yeah, we didn't have a choice.
Yeah, I hate to say it to the flight attendant who's so happy that I selected to fly with her, but Betsy, gee, I had no idea that you were even going to be on this flight.
You know, are you still national spokesperson for the Association of Library Trustees, Advocates, Friends, and Foundations?
I am, although since they've changed their name, it's been harder.
That's a new name then?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a mouthful.
Yeah, they used to be just called Friends of the Library.
See,
they're going to shorten it to something that that collects them all into one umbrella term again. That would be helpful. But basically, I help raise awareness and funds for local fundraising arms for our local libraries.
Ohio has a great tradition of libraries. But they've been hit very hard in recent years because of the economic downturn.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case everywhere. And the truth is, you know, I always thought that libraries were paid for by all tax money. I just thought that they were. And then I met these people and found out that, in fact, although some tax money has gone to libraries, and in some cases, even lots of tax money has gone to libraries. In some communities, they do, like, you know, bond issues or whatever to rebuild or restore. But in fact, there are these arms called used to be called Friends of the Libraries, and now they call that very long thing that you just listed. that do just that. They raise money to buy books and to add on and to refurbish and to buy CDs and to put up computers and to provide really. One of the things about the library that you really got to give it credit for, they do kind of morph into what's needed in a lot of cases. I mean, there's a lot of libraries where they provide help with resume writing because of so many people looking for work. There's after school programs. There's summer reading programs. There's speakers. We have an auditorium. A small auditorium at our library where they have regularly speakers come in. Mm-hmm. In fact, I walked into the side of the electronic door at our library. You know how the door opens, like, automatically?
Yeah.
And opens towards you? Well, I didn't walk into the glass, and I feel proud of that. We were on our way in, me and my kids, and it's not my fault. Somebody distracted me. Somebody talked to me while I was walking in, and I said hello to them. And when I turned back, the very side of the door was right in front of me.
Yeah.
And I didn't have time to stop, and I was in a hurry, and I sort of charged in. And so I hit the side of the door and fell backwards. Now, there's a big crowd waiting in the sort of...
you're the guest of honor.
I was not. It was Sophia Loren.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't it? It was. No, yeah. Raquel Welch. No, what? Sophia Loren. Who's the one who just came out with a book? It was one of those two large-breasted women.
Yes, they're like they are. They're in a category of their own, yeah.
Yeah, I think it might have been Raquel Welch.
Okay.
Anyways, there was a large group waiting to see her. So I hit the side of the door. I was not going to see her. We were going to get books. I hit the side of the door, fell over backwards, literally flipped over. I hit the door so hard. Not one person helped me because they didn't want to miss their space in line. to hear one of those large-breasted actresses talk. I can't remember which one it was.
About her new book.
Yeah, yeah. So I was nearly killed at the library, and yet I still support it.
Well, thank you for supporting public media.
Well, it's a great thing. We can't, we will not do well. I shouldn't say can't. We will not do well without good journalism. And citizen journalists are not enough. We need sources that we can trust that are not, you know, that don't swing one way or the other or editorialize. And that can be found in public media.
Thank you for joining us today, Paula Poundstone.
Thank you very much. It was great talking with you.
That's Paula Poundstone, the comedian. She will be appearing at the Capitol Theater on Friday. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
For years, immigration agents raided businesses where they arrested and often deported undocumented workers. Now the Obama administration appears to have shifted the focus of the crackdown on illegal immigration to the companies who hire those workers. I'm Neil Conan. Immigration enforcement targets employers, plus the opinion page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon at 2 on 89.7 NPR News. It's currently 75 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 88, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 67. There is a chance of rain for Tuesday and warm, partly sunny, a high of 91. Partly cloudy Tuesday night, a low of 71 degrees. More sunshine for Wednesday and even warmer, a high of 94. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 72. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld, for more than, how many years now, Mimi?
You really want to know?
Yeah.
Are you there? 55.
55
Well, I started
years.
In 56, teaching in 56. So how many? You do the numbers. Don't.
Anyway, 55 years has playfully and lovingly taught teachers, parents, and children of all ages in Canada, Taiwan, throughout the United States, and she continues to travel extensively. Her two collections, Teaching in the Key of Life and Teaching by Heart. Plus,
and Celebrating Young Children.
That's
and
right.
Their Teachers. That's a new one.
And I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, I have to give it to you.
Plus articles, stories, poems. They're enjoyed worldwide. Since 1970, she's taught numerous schools and programs in Columbus, Ohio. She's our crown jewel of creative education in Columbus, Ohio. Her favorite student evaluation, I always like to remember this, is from a six-year-old boy who dubbed her the Queen of Fun. It's always fun when Mimi joins us. Welcome back to the
Thank
show.
Thank you, Ann. It was great to have Paula on.
Oh, yeah, Paula Poundstone.
She is so hilarious.
Yeah, she's a stitch. She's a lot of fun to talk to, just like you.
Oh.
I mean, just kind of able to just kind of, as one person mentioned, randomly talk about
anything. We can go on forever, random.
Which is so nice on a Monday just to be a little bit random. Last Monday was a little intense, but,
yeah.
You know, actually last Monday, because of what was happening at OSU. But now summer's going to kick off. I mean, the end of school
Right.
is upon us. I know it in Worthington, it's over in a few days. Around the city, kids are looking for something to do, and you're starting your annual library program.
Right, today.
Tell us.
See,
she's
clothing?
Beautifully attired. If you can get online and check out what Mimi's wearing today, it's fabulous. It matches our color scheme to a certain degree.
Right,
so,
gray.
Yeah, no.
Oh,
ha, 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 purple.
Oh, that's purple? Hmm.
Yeah, well, that's not purple.
Oh.
But there's purple.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
That's purple.
Right. And
good.
I feel
more
there.
At home now.
Yeah, well, it's purple. We have a lot of purple.
You know,
it's
a funny story about the Queen of Fun. Well, a couple of people called and said, you know, how do we know what's going on in the libraries? And I said, every summer, Columbus Metropolitan Library sponsors fabulous programs for children in every branch. All summer. I mean, maybe for the first 5 weeks, maybe. But, you know, and every day. And they're open to anyone. You can just walk in. You have to register or anything. And so how do you find out? Either you get on the website of Columbus Metropolitan Libraries or your branch will have its summer program. So mine is under the heading Hanging Out with the Queen of Fun.
Oh.
But only because I don't want them to say storyteller, because they want a label. You know, people want to know, are you a storyteller? Are you a dancer? What are you? And I don't want to say what I am, because, heck, I don't even know what I am. So I don't want anyone to go, well, she's a storyteller. Why is she dancing? Well, she's a dancer. Why is she doing stories? You know how people get in their little boxes?
Yeah.
So to avoid that, because we had some incidents where, you know, somebody said, I thought you were a storyteller. And he walked out with his child in a stroller because he was so upset because we were dancing.
Oh, there's rigidity.
So I called the library friends. I said, do not say I'm anything. So I said, we have to say something. So I said, okay, say hanging out with the Queen of Fun. That's
perfect,
my program.
It's so true. You know, I was worried that you were going to come in this morning and tell me that your program had been cut because the libraries are so much struggling. And probably will even more in the years to come.
And the cuts going on now, and you didn't want to get tense or intense, because it's a joyful Monday morning. Mm-hmm. But if I tell you how we are cutting the children, the early childhood, a special today's paper on some of the school systems cutting all the extracurricular, which is probably why half the kids come and stay in school, is because of the music and the sports and the drama. You know, that's what holds
them
there.
But even beyond that, there's a lot of evidence that there's a neurological thing going on. It's actually physiological when you're engaged in music.
Absolutely. And that is a topic.
It taps a different part of your brain.
But the cuts, when mm-hmm. we cut those things, we are cutting the heart. You know, I'm a big passionate advocate, as you know, for not cutting the things that really make us what we are as a people. And so I was having this big argument with this very intelligent man who said, we have to cut 10% off every single thing, every spending. We have to cut 10% right across the board. Nobody's immune. And I said, if you had to cut 10% of your body, I mean, maybe you could cut your nails, you know, your eyelashes, your hair. Maybe you could even cut some skin off. I mean, but you can't cut out your heart and your brain. And when you say 10%, there are things that are not equal. And when you cut children and you cut the things that make a community of humans, you know, that give them a reason to live and give them a quality of life, or elderly home care. I mean, all the things, these are cutting the hearts. So I am very fiercely passionate about this. And, you know, as wild as I am, I'm a complete passionate person about not cutting the things that make us what we are as human beings and help us live as human beings. So this is, I'm with you. So thank God the library program is going on this summer, and all the parks are free.
Right.
And they have programs all summer.
Community centers are going to stay open.
And the community centers stayed open, thank God. And and you can just take children anywhere. You can take them out, you know, out to the new park downtown. You can go to Blacklick. And there's nature walks and there's the libraries. I mean, there are still things people can do that do not cost money.
My guest is Mimi Chenfeld. She is an author, an educator, and a talker. And if you have a question or comment for Mimi, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go on to Facebook and post your question or comment there, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, too.
Only ask us good questions.
Happy questions.
Happy
questions. We've already talked about all the downers, I guess, for the day. I was wondering, you know, you do teach teachers, and there have been some interesting discussions going on lately about not just how much we value our teachers, but how we value our teachers. And are you finding, you know, in the teachers you're working with, how are they feeling to you? What have you taken the temperature out there, and how are they doing?
And do you really want me to tell you?
I bring up really depressing
things. You really want me to tell you? All right, I'm going to tell you. This is the real MS, the real truth.
Okay.
I have never seen, and this is 55 years, I have never seen in the last decade teachers so feeling devalued, so feeling frustrated, so ready to retire the minute they can retire. the testing thing, the merit thing. You know, we were down at the State House about Senate Bill 5.
Well, that's right. I saw you get your picture in the paper, I think.
You saw my picture? Oh, probably. I was probably wearing something I was going to a program with. And oops. But you know what? You cannot put teachers and education at the center of blame. And teachers are feeling like they need a scapegoat. And we are, I mean, hey, there's parents, there's communities, there's children who come from no families. There's children who don't have, you know, when you see the difference between the haves and the have-nots. I went to two graduations, and I won't even say where. One was a very wealthy, suburban, not diverse population. And the graduation was, oh, my gosh, beautiful. Every kid came up, you know, out of a magazine cover. The families were there, glittering and beautiful, and it was beautiful. The school was beyond. The theater was like a Broadway theater with the lights and, you know, they had everything they could have. The technology, the painting was beautiful, you know, just colors and gorgeous and shining. And the other school was an inner city, you know, urban school, kind of shabby, you know, shabby school. You know, there's a lot of neglect in the building and the families coming and screaming and cheering because the kids graduated from high school. 2/3 of those kids are not going on. Where are they going? I don't know. They were just so happy to graduate high school. The other kids, 4 out of 400 were going to college. And the more you see this difference between people who have so much and people who really, communities, it really, so teachers are teaching and, you know, trying to teach everywhere, and they're getting blamed for everything. And it's easy to say, it's your fault. And you need to test. And if your kids don't test well, you're a crappy teacher. You know, and you're saying, look, I've got kids who are coming in who have no language. I have kids coming in who are behind 2 years. I got them up a year. Now they just progressed a year, but that's not good enough to make the, you know, No Child Left Behind. So the teachers are at the center of a lot of blame, harassment, pressure.
You know, we're even before the cuts that the state's going through right now, and a lot of districts are struggling with anyway.
Oh, yes.
Because of passing ballots, getting ballots local levies passed is so difficult right now because of the economy. You know, the whole testing issue came up years ago. I just wonder, in 55 years, what do you compare this era to that we're in right now?
It's hard to compare because, I mean, I come from New York and we had the New York State Regents, and they still have the New York State Regents. But the Regents isn't the be-all and the end-all. And here the testing in the country has become the be-all and the end-all. And because of that, it's caused teachers to have to teach to the tests, and, you know, and start practicing for the tests. The day the kids come in, they're already worried about not passing the tests, little ones. And now they're talking about testing little ones. And, you know, the pressure on the testing is I've been saying this for years, even on OSU over the years, you know, like crying and screaming. I mean, don't say don't test. Of course you need to test. That's one way of evaluating. But there are kids who don't test well. I don't test well. I can fake it. I can pass like, whoa, she just passed. Do you know what you just did? No, I've got a clue. I passed the test and I'm good. There are test takers that are great. There are kids who know this stuff in a different way. So the more ways you open up to evaluate children, the more opportunities you have to help them succeed. If you only can evaluate them in one way, then that the kids who don't do well that way are going to just fall through, and teachers are going to fall through with them.
Mimi Chemfeld's with us till the end of the hour. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Don't wait, call now. A quote that it's a Yiddish proverb that inspires your work, is all my children are prodigies.
I love that one. Isn't that a great one?
It is.
All of my children are prodigies, which means you don't give up on any child. You don't give up on any. You don't easily label children. I think kids are labeled now so fast. I mean, the minute we see a kid, you know, not pay attention, go, oh, ADD, SDS, LSD, you know, MRR. I mean, you give them some initial, you get them some, you know, label, you get a medication. I mean, you have kids who are labeled so quickly, And, you know, the kids sometimes who are labeled, you know, severe ADD or whatever the newest initials are, those kids, when they're interested in something, are paying total attention. They're focused, they're disciplined, and they're interested. And when they're not, they go, like, forget it. Like half the people. I mean, I do a lot of presentations all over the place, and mm-hmm. if somebody's not interested, you can see them, like, dozing off, like, looking out the window. Like,
they don't have to be kids.
Yeah, they're not. And if I do something that tries to get their attention, you know, like strip or something, you know, you got to go to extremes. You know, suddenly they pay attention. But I'm saying even adults. So all of my children are prodigies. It's just, you know, it's a commitment of faith in every child. And, you know, you see even in children that people have given up on, like, you know, they talk about severe autistic children who will not respond. And something happens and it clicks in somewhere and a child responds. And it might be the one way that we haven't tried yet that would reach a child. So I just do not ever believe ever in giving up. I actually had a metaphor. Do you want me to give you my quick metaphor for
yes.
that? You do or you don't.
Yes.
You can tell me.
I do.
Do not give us that
give
metaphor.
Give us the metaphor.
Okay. So years ago, I was invited to do a big, big reading session for all the reading people. I think it was in Cincinnati, one of the other cities. And I went down there. It was in a huge church, a giant church is where they were meeting. All the reading people were meeting in this huge church, and I had the directions and all my stuff. I was carrying my stuff, and I went to the first door I saw, and it was locked. And then I went, oh, gee, this door is locked. You know how the old churches, they take up a whole city block, mm-hmm. and there are like 25 different doors to get in. So I walked down with all my gear, my stuff, you know, my puppets, my tambourines, you know, all my junk. And then I get to the next door. It's locked. And I'm like, holy, So I keep walking, and there's another door, and I go up, drag everything, locked. So by the time I got around the block, I said, darn it. You know, I could have said, the heck with this. I'm going back to Columbus. You know, they want me to come here, blah, 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 blah. So I went all the way around the street, and I went to it took me about 25 minutes. And if I had gone left instead of right, like Moses,
yeah, yeah.
Moses, go left, don't go right. If I had gone left, it would have been the first door. So I opened the door, and I was going, where were you? We're waiting, there's coffee, and there's people. And I said, you know, this happened to me for a reason. There are kids like this. You knock on every door, and you say, okay, I give up. I've knocked on 10 doors, but if you keep knocking and knocking, somewhere inside, they're waiting for you. So kind of all of my children are prodigies. It's kind of fixed into that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep knocking.
Find the right door. Sometimes it's closer than you think. Abby from Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi,
Thank
Abby.
You. How are you? Mimi, I've taken several classes from you. You've been to my class several times. Queen of Fun is the absolute ideal slogan for you at the library, by the way. That's great. I just like to say your analogy of parts of your body and what you can keep and what you need in your heart is the best thing I've heard about education for a long time. I'm a teacher, and I'm in school right now, even though we're closed, and there's about probably half of us are still back working, so in case anybody wants to know what teachers do in their summertime. But you should publish that all over so people know, because we need those things so much, and it's something that we just don't get enough of. But I want to thank you for all the years and all the time that you've given to me as a teacher.
Abby, you are so dear, but you know what? You guys are an example of what I'm talking about. Even with the harassment, even with everything going on, teachers like you who stay in touch and close and reaching the children, that you are the heroes. You guys inspire me.
Well, I appreciate it. And you're right. There's a lot. Every time I turn on the news, you know, something's to blame because of what teachers have done. And it's very hard on people. I think most people try to stay very optimistic. But when you hear that every day and you know you're doing a good job, it's very disconcerting.
It's right. When you know that what you are doing is not the high value in this culture.
Right.
You know, if you know what, you should learn to play basketball. I mean, what are you doing as a teacher? You know, I start my class at Otterbein College next week. I teach every summer arts across the curriculum. And it amazes me that kids are still going into education with all the negativity around going into education. It just shows. I call them the Mother Teresa's of Mother and Father Teresa's of America.
Abby, thank you so much for that call. I just noticed the clock. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Mimi Chenfeld about creative education, creative learning. If you have a question or comment for her, please give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. On the next Fresh Air, former boxing champ Sugar Ray Leonard.
There is no sweeter feeling than when you throw the perfect punch, because you get this little tingling sensation up and down your arm to let you know that you've hit the jackpot.
Leonard has a new autobiography. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of sexualizing characteristics in girls' clothing. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Home Instead Senior Care, providing seniors in our community support and independence since 1996. More at 1-800-4-SENIORS, Home Instead. To us, it's personal.
Listen to 89.7 NPR News anywhere, anytime by streaming on the web. Just visit WOSU.org and click on the Listen Live link on the left-hand side of the page. Listen to local and national news programming online at WOSU.org. It's 78 degrees, currently mostly sunny skies today, and a high of 88 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 67. There is a chance of rain tomorrow, partly sunny skies and a high of 91. Cloudy Tuesday night and a low of 71. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Mimi Chenfeld. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you want to talk about creative learning. That's what we're talking about today, creative learning, creative education, and metaphors. It's a day of metaphors. Mimi, you said you had another metaphor.
Oh, yes. Oh, I did. I had. I call this getting hit with a metaphor. So I was talking to all these teachers, and before and after and during the conference, they were telling me, you know, how some of them were going to leave, how some of them cried at night because they felt so, you know, pressured and devalued and you know, just every kind of betrayal they could think of. And they were dedicated. They're all dedicated. So I had this metaphor hit me. I mean, I can't even take credit for it, which is spotting. You know, dancers and skaters and gymnasts can spot. They swirl around. They spin. And then you think, how come they spin that way and not fall down? And most of the folks listening know about spotting. You know what about spotting?
You find a place on a wall or something
immovable place that you click on every time you go around, and that for some physical reason keeps you from falling. So I thought, we're all spinning, but we don't have a spot, because the spot has to be the children. If that spot is the children, you can stay in. If that spot is testing, is administration, is government legislation, you're going to fall. But if that spot is the kids, and that's what you're spotting on, you'll be okay. And I think that helped a lot of people. I share that with a couple of thousand, you know, teachers and education majors, and they said that really helped. Because once isn't that, then you're finished. You fool.
Bob in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Yes, good morning. I have found that good teachers have always been in demand. The problem is not teachers anymore. The problem is firefighters, or the problem is police officers. The problem is their unions, because the unions act in the best interest of the substandard of each. And there are substandard teachers. and they may have 20 years experience and still be substandard. But their unions keep them in. So the nobody's against teachers any more than they're against firefighters or police officers. But their unions have gotten way out of control, and that's the big problem. We have substandard teachers that are kept because of the unions, and that has to be corrected. That's not fair to the children.
Bob, I am absolutely with you on incompetent teachers should be either cured and turned into competent, good, dedicated teachers or encouraged to leave. You know, I think the attack on unions has been very harsh because let's remember how the unions developed because of the opposite side of what happened. You know, I don't like the way you wear your hair, so you're not going to get your contract renewed. And it was very personal all through this. I absolutely agree that the unions, and I do think that they are working on this completely. They also want ways to be sure only competent, dedicated teachers are working with our children. They have to be involved in the process, not just rejected as a bad group. I think that movie that came out, Waiting for Superman?
Yeah, there's Waiting for Superman,
yeah,
and then there's
really,
Race to Nowhere.
It really skewed the way people look at unions and not realize where unions came from. You know, just going back to a minute, I was at a rally in Upper Arlington where Governor Strickland and Representative Celeste spoke, and also the head of the police, and he talked about why we had unions, you know, and what the unions have done, and what, don't let us forget the history of unions. So I think you're right. Unions have to evolve into a more enlightened way of dealing with these issues, and I think they are. This is very dear and deep to them, but they don't want, you know, another arbitrary way of evaluating teachers. So it's a very tricky, you know, if there's only one way, then a teacher who might really not come through with the qualities that you would think make a good teacher, like, you know, just for an example, there are teachers who are obviously wonderful, loving, popular, successful. Then there are teachers who are very strict and they're not at all, you know, user-friendly, as you would say, kid-friendly. But they may be some of the best teachers a kid ever has. And there's got to be a way that's so personal, it's so diverse in how many different ways. There's no one way. There's no formula for good teaching. So it's not exactly, you know, a measurement that's easily applied. And I think everyone's working on it.
Thank you, Bob, for that call. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to talk with Mimi Chenfeld, the author and educator extraordinaire. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Another motto that you've embraced over the years, it's by Reggio Emilio.
Yes.
Nothing without joy.
Yes. I love
even
that.
Even nothing without joy?
Yeah, because there's joy, all kinds of joy, you know. There's a joy in just understanding something you didn't understand. There's a joy in getting it. I mean, I want to expand. Nothing without joy is the motto of Reggio Emilia, which is the Italian city that features and highlights the arts for children. The entire city or town or village or whatever, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Definition is like completely 100% besides all the children experiencing in-depth arts experiences. And it's fantastic. You know, the only thing they don't really include is music and movement. So that was my only, like, wish list.
Nothing's perfect.
Wish list, right. Nothing's perfect. You said it. You said it. I agreed. But anyway, I love nothing without joy, because I don't mean just joy in a party or joy in a celebrating or joy in going out with your friends during, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of definitions of joy, and when you get a light in someone's eyes that he or she just got it, that's joyful. Or I just succeeded. I did something I couldn't do. That's joy. So all the ways of joyfulness as against grim and scared and stressed. I mean, education should be a really joyful experience. It should be something like, wow. I didn't understand this. I just discovered this. I can do this. I see how this works. You know, there's so many ways. I never noticed this. Now I notice. I wasn't interested in this. Now I'm interested. So this is so many ways to experience joy. I mean, we're just so limited in our media coverage, and you'll probably talk about that in the next hour. But, I love nothing without joy. So no matter what you do, you can make it joyful, exciting. Does that
Mitchell,
make sense?
Yes, it does. Mitchell in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Hi. I just wanted to take a minute to encourage all the listeners, if there's a teacher that you know of that was your teacher in school, grade school, junior high school, to go and, you know, say hi to them and thank them for everything they did for you. I mean, I have a special one in third grade that, you know, her classroom to me was an oasis. And she did find other ways to teach me. You know, I didn't learn like everybody else. So she found another way. And I hope she's still around. She's a professor, last I knew, at Capital. She's, you know, one of my heroes. So I just thought it would be just a good idea to ask people to go and find someone. I'm sure it's appreciated by teachers all around that people do that.
What's her name, Mitchell?
Her name is Toby Sanders.
I know. You know, Mitchell, I was thinking that you were thinking about Toby.
I can't call
her
anything.
She's a sweetie poo.
She was the greatest. I mean, I'm not as, you know, like if she's gone, but I
no,
hope
she's
still...
a cap. She's a Capital now.
Oh, good. Well,
she's head of one of the departments.
Good. I need to get over there and say hi to her again. I had an opportunity to say hi to her and have lunch with her, and I need to do it again. And hopefully, she's listening. You know,
if not, I'll call her and tell her this.
Well, she mentioned me one time. She said I was one of her ghost students. One said she wasn't quite sure whatever happened to me, and you know, I turned out okay.
Mitchell, I love you know. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, especially about Toby, who I know very well and is just a wonderful teacher of teachers and teacher of children, and just person.
She had just it was 1972 or 73 when she was my teacher, and I'll always remember her, you know, as one of the greatest.
Well, you know, years ago, I do a lot with artists in the schools with the Greater Columbus Arts Council. So I've been in many, many, many of the schools in Columbus over the years. And one of my colleagues who's also did residencies, could be an hour, could be a half a day, a week. And she did a half a day, Mary Sue Garlinger, in movement with the school. And she got a letter from a child. Dear Mary Sue, thank you for coming today. You made me happy for the rest of my life.
Wow.
So this is kind of your call. You remember her for the rest of your life.
Thank you, Mitchell. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, I suppose, I mean, there's bad teachers out there. We've all had them. I mean, it's not, but you almost learn from that, too.
I always tell students, you know, college students who are going into education, they have to spend like 6 months or a quarter or whatever time, 6 weeks with a teacher, a master teacher, and do their student teaching. And sometimes it's a very bad experience for some reason. Most of them, wonderful experiences, but a few times they'll come and say, I have the worst teacher, terrible. And I will say, one of my friends said, you went to Miss Pollyanna School, Mim. I would say, that is a good experience because you are seeing firsthand how you do not want to teach. And if it's just theory, you may feel a certain way, but when you see it in action, you will absolutely be confirmed in your commitment to the children. So I do think that that's could be a good experience.
Tom in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Tom. Okay. Sorry about that. Sorry.
Tom was a dropout.
Tom, sorry about that. I don't know why we lost your call, but we still have a few minutes left. If you want to get back with us, we'll try to get you on right away. Well, if short of somebody else calling in, there's another call pending, so we'll see what's going to happen with that. But the I am still learning quote from
Michelangelo,
that you never stop.
I love that.
Learning.
That was his motto, Michelangelo. And I just think it's a great motto, you know, because some people say, well, this is how I do things. I'm too old to do it a different way. I'm closed to all new ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think as much as you can be, I mean, I have my closed doors. You know, technology is one of my total closed doors. I mean, I am, like, still in my cave, painting on the walls, waiting for fire. You know, really, you know. But as open as you can be is the best way to be.
Tom, you're on the air. We're running out of time, but we wanted to get you on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Tom.
I wanted to share a story about a hero teacher and encourage other teachers to think this way. I was horribly dyslexic. She was my literature teacher. When I wrote things, you could literally hold up my paper to the sun, and it looked pink. Mm-hmm. Because when I reread things, you know, all the words that were missing were there for me. And at any rate, I was a really bad student. However, she would always write on the back. She gave me the legitimate grade, but she'd write on the back of my paper how much, I'm 61 years old, this still chokes me up, how much she enjoyed how my mind worked and what I talked about and how I expressed myself. And finally, she said to me, she called me in one day and she said, look, I think one other teacher was faced with this choice. Her student was little E, little E, little C Cummings. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop trying to force you to abide by conventions because you communicate better than any student I've ever had. And so, like I said, now I'm 61 years old. I have 30 years in communication. And unhumbly, I'm the ultimate storyteller. And I did write her a letter about how important she was to me.
Tom,
that
is a beautiful story, and it says everything that I could ever say in a much better way. Thank you for sharing that, sweetie.
There's never a shortage when you're on the air of people wanting to call in and talk about teachers that inspired them.
No, it's wonderful. I think it's great that people are remembering and that we trigger it in some way. I think, you know, this is what's lost in the media. That I, you know, the positive, the reinforcement, the appreciation. I just hope everybody remembers. Instead of the one teacher who's a real, you know, whatever, whatever, should have chosen another career path, but the many teachers who didn't. So I'm very appreciative of that.
Mamie Chumfield, thanks for joining us today. One of the last days of school in the Central Ohio area.
Thank you, sweet.
One of the last days of regular school. The learning goes on. Mamie Chumfield, author, educator. If you want to learn more about it, we'll have some links on our website at WOSU.org. In the meantime, thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.